Blog Talk Radio.
Here on Suspense Radio, we got a great show for you. I am your host, John Robb, and we're going to have a lot of announcements that are going to be coming up here. But first, we're going to also say Alan Jacobson and Lisa Unger are going to be joining us tonight live, so stick around for that. And 60 Minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now. Everybody's listening to us here from, but we're in Southern California breaking a record yesterday of 113 degrees we had here in Los Angeles. And you want to talk about hot. That was extremely hot. A little cooler today, which is good. But it was one of those great times that you get to sit inside if you didn't have to work, turn the air conditioner, read some great books. We have some great news that we have coming up here. I got some emails that I want to go through from one of our good friends, Chris Kuzneski. He was sitting here, and we subscribe to a lot of newsletters. That's a great way for you guys out there to stay with your favorite author and see, you know, what's coming up, what are they doing, where are they going, what's coming out, is to go to their fan sites or go to their web pages, sign up for their newsletters, let them send them over to you once a month to be able to find out, you know, exactly, you know, what they're doing. And Chris is saying that he has now, you know, started his summer tour to promote his American release of The Prophecy. And that's a book that you want to go and look for. And, again, that's Chris Kuzneski. His newest thriller is going to be released in the U.K. on September 30th, and it's going to be called The Secret Crown. He says it's one of the best books, one of the best he's ever written. He says it's definitely in his top six and knows that he's only written six books. But you get a great sense here of, you know, going and finding out about the author. Another great way to do this is Patricia Cornwell. Penguin sent us over the release here that she has a new fan page up on Facebook. Came up in mid-August. She already has attracted thousands of followers. She's updating that quite frequently to let you know what's coming out with her, because her 18th Kay Scarpetta novel, Port Mortuary, is going to be published and released on November 30th. We are very close to being able to get Patricia here to talk about that on the show, so stay tuned for more about that to see if we can get her out. But go to Facebook and sign up for her fan page, and you can, you know, be able to get information on what's going with her. She is also on Twitter at 1pcornwell, so twitter.com/1pcornwell. Another thing we got here is from Grand Central Publishing, and Marcia Mueller is an author that has written many novels and short stories. Her novel, Wolf in the Shadows, won the Anthony Boucher Award. She's the recipient of Private Eye Writers of America's Lifetime Achievement Award and Mystery Writers of America Grand Master Award, which is their highest award that they can give. And her newest novel is going to be released on October 28th called Coming Back. And this is centered around her character, which is a San Francisco private eye, Sharon McCone. So you want to take a look out for that one on October 28th, Coming Back by Marcia Mueller. So there's a lot of things that are going on right now, and I also want to mention, you know, this is the time of year when you start looking at TV shows, TV previews and premieres of what's going on. And not only me and Suspense Magazine, but I get cut out of the magazine too, because I wrote a nice story and it was talking about TV premieres and it was talking, you know, about, you know, what's coming up and what to look for. Yeah, well, just because that, you know, I'm the CEO publisher doesn't mean that the editor doesn't go through and cut me out too. But I am going to say that I have been watching the show, and I saw the first one called The Event. Don't really know about what to do with that. Still in the learning stage, trying to figure out if that's going to be like a Lost or something that's going to keep you going, or is it just going to be dead after you know, one episode or, you know, one season. The one show, there's actually two shows that I think are doing extremely well, and I saw the first ones of those, were Detroit 187 and Blue Bloods. Both shows, I thought, they're both crime police dramas, where Detroit 187 is more along the lines, take away the law part of Law and Order, and it's more along the lines of just the, you know, order part of it, and it's set in Detroit, and it's, you know, it's about private eyes or, you know, detectives going on. You have, you know, many different types of detectives, where you have the 30-year veteran, the guy on there for one day. Then you have, you know, the other guy that's been on the beat for a little bit. So that's something that, you know, you want to look at, because it is pretty good in the fact of drama, and I can see that show going a long way. Along with the other one is Blue Bloods, with this Tom Selleck coming back to the screen, which is good. He's the police commissioner of New York, and his family is all within law enforcement, where he's had, you know, his son is just got inducted into the New York Police Department. His other son, which is Mark Wahlberg, or Donnie Wahlberg, I get him confused. One of the Wahlbergs, it's like the bald ones, do you really know? And so he is a police detective, more along the lines of, you know, a little bit more rampant, a little bit more, you know, kind of on his own, doing kind of his own thing. And so that is a show that I think you should look at. So I wanted, you know, to know, are people more anticipating TV fall premieres of shows, whether it's comedies or whether it's whatever, or do you anticipate summer blockbuster movies? I think this last summer was absolutely abysmal in the movie scene, but thank God that there's great writers and there's great books out there. And speaking of that, we're talking here about a book that's coming out called Velocity. And this book is from our first guest here, Alan Jacobson. And so, Alan, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, John. You staying cool?
You know what? I'm trying. I got like 17 fans on me. I got my feet in ice water, and I have someone coming in every so often just dumping water on my head, because I'm not used to this heat. I got to be honest with you.
You know, at the opening of the show, when you said, I got something hot to tell you, I thought you were going to talk about Velocity. I thought it was the perfect lead-in. And then you talked about the weather.
Well, yeah, I got you. No, I tell you, the heat gets to me and it kind of cooks my brain. It's kind of like a fried egg in there. I don't know what's going on. Sometimes it gets scrambled and, you know, I add a little cheese. I got like an omelet going up there. But, yeah, this heat is definitely just not for me. But the reason why I didn't mention that is because, you know, when you say hot, you know, you say Velocity, but your book is, you know, far past that. You know, it's far past the word hot. I wouldn't even put the word hot there. It's got to be higher than that. I mean, it's like scorching. How about that?
Thank you. I'll take that. Thank you.
So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about Velocity? This is a Karen Vale novel. So go ahead and you know, give a little background about it.
Well, Velocity is the third book in the Karen Vale series. And for those people out there who haven't read Karen Vale yet, she's the first female FBI profiler. And I did 7 years of research with the profiling unit in Quantico before I started writing The Seventh Victim, which was the first book in the series. And I really wanted to learn what the profilers did, how they did what they did, and who the killers were. and how they did what they did and why they did what they did. I mean, yeah, I could have made it all up. I could have read some of the textbooks out there that are written on the subject, but there's no substitute for working with the profilers, for seeing what they're seeing, for hearing what they're thinking when they start to debate a case. And, I mean, that was just absolutely invaluable experience for me. And not only was it a great experience in terms of a writer, but it was just fascinating. I mean, it really stirred something in me that I knew next to nothing about this field when I met FBI agent Mark Safrick back in the early 90s, and that was quite by accident, but he was at the time on the short list for promotion to the profiling unit, and he was stationed out in Sacramento in the field office. And we met and started talking, and that's a whole story in and of itself, but suffice it to say, it turned into a friendship that's now gone on almost 18 years.
Well, that's great. And so I'm looking here at your website, and I have to give you kudos, because alanjacobson.com, and that's J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N.com, and when you click on your books, you are the first author, I have to say, that I've ever seen that does such a great job of when you click and it says velocity, what it is, where the setting is, who the main characters are. You're listing out an ebook fashion, how you can get it, who the audio is from. I mean, you have this written down for all of your books. And, you know, was that by choice? Did someone say, hey, you know what, you should do this? Or was that on your own? Because I think it's great.
No, you know, it was on my own. I kind of look at it as what I would like to see in a website. And, you know, some websites are just visually stunning, and some have great content. And I tried to strike a balance in between and say, you know, what would I like to see about a book when I turn to, you know, click on the link that shows all the books that an author's written. And, you know, you learn by observing what others have done well, what others have done poorly, and I just looked at it as, you know, I reversed the tables and said, if I was somebody, a reader, a fan, what would I like to see laid out in front of me in terms of what information is available about the book? So, in terms of velocity, all those things. The other reason, John, that I do that, and it's kind of how I started that listing, was I feel that the setting is so important to a book. And as I've matured as a writer, I've learned how to take the elements of a setting and make it a character in that novel, such that you could not take one of my novels and move it to another place in the country or even in the world, because there are things that happen relative to that setting and the history of that setting and the nuances and the behind-the-scenes things that go on there that nobody really knows about. And I kind of nose around and I talk to people and I find out this stuff and incorporate that into the characters that partake in the story and the events that unfold. So I like to list where each one of my books is set, because I think that adds a different dimension to each of my novels.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that definitely adds to the depth of, you know, the novel, of what people are reading and, you know, what they're going to get into. So my question, another question I have here is, so your first book was 1999, called False Accusations.
Right.
And how have you, I guess, kind of progressed yourself from a writer from False Accusations till now, your latest novel, Velocity?
Oh, wow.
Because you're talking 11 years.
Yeah. I'm not even sure how to answer that question. There's so much to it. I have a degree in English. I did a lot of writing, and that was my concentration in my English major, was writing. So I took screenwriting workshop and playwriting workshop and short story workshop and creative writing. I mean, all the courses that are designed to give you different aspects of what it takes to write creatively. And, you know, you take all that information and you know the information, but when you sit down to start applying it, that's when you really learn how to apply your trade. And False Accusations was not the first novel I'd written, which is probably not a shock, but it was my second. And the story came to me in a way that I was just very excited about the prospect of somebody being falsely accused of a crime and being unable to prove his innocence. So the Sam Shepard murder trial obviously factored into that. Around the same time in the Bay Area, there was a case of repressed memories were a woman under therapy, supposedly had these memories of her father abusing her, and it came out, and the father lost his job, his wife divorced him, the daughter wouldn't talk to him again, and it was this horrendous situation, and later it came out that those memories were false, and they were kind of planted there. And anyway, this guy lost his entire life and all his friends and family for something that he didn't do, and so the concept of being falsely accused and being unable to prove your innocence is what was the jumping-off point for me there. And it was such an intriguing story, and of course the ending, I don't know if you remember, but the ending is really one of those jaw-droppers, and it goes right down to the last page, actually the last sentence. So it was one of those books that wrote itself. It just came out of me very organically. But over the years, with each novel that I've written, you learn more about yourself as a writer. You learn more about how to push yourself, how to challenge yourself, both in creating characters and, like I was saying before, about using the setting. I've always been intrigued by the setting, and I've always tried to pick places and restaurants and when a character goes to eat, you know, try to make it a real place so that people who know that area can relate to it and also pick it for a special reason, you know. So if it's on the coast, you pick a certain seafood restaurant that has, you know, a certain reputation, just better than just a generic restaurant. But so in terms of building my knowledge base, Seventh Victim was really kind of a jump for me. That was my third novel. Like, I kind of skipped there, The Hunted, which was tremendously fun for me to write. And at the time, I was engrossed, deeply engrossed in my work with the FBI. And The Hunted, not surprisingly, takes place in large part at the FBI Academy. And I had been at the Academy several times at the time before I started writing The Hunted, during, and then, of course, after. So I had the FBI Academy on my mind.
Right.
And The Hunted was just, it was a tremendous amount of fun for me to write, because it starts off as psychological suspense and just blows up into this thriller. Then came The Seventh Victim, which was the first Karen Vale novel. And that one really, in terms of, we talk about how a writer evolves, that one was so totally different from everything else I'd written because of Karen Vale. Karen Vale really makes that book. She came out of nowhere for me. You know, we sit down as writers and we think of interesting characters that we want to create and why we want this character. And some writers even, you know, go into the what color is the character's favorite color and what food and music. I never have done that. A character comes to me, and I guess I'm fortunate in that respect, and I know that character just when I create him or her. But Karen Vale was different. She came totally unplanned, just off my fingertips in the middle of this other book that I had been writing. And I realized there that energy that I felt from her, I needed to make her a main character in a novel. And around that time is when I was really starting to feel that I had a handle on the behavioral analysis that the profiling unit does. And I started hashing out the story behind The Seventh Victim. And, of course, Karen Vale was the main character. The setting for Crush, which was the next Karen Vale novel, was the Napa Valley. And I went to the Napa Valley for a number of reasons. One is I love the Napa Valley. I've spent a lot of time there over the years. I've always wanted to set a story there, but none of the ideas I came up with were what you call, you know, I have to write this book. It doesn't stay with me. If an idea stays with me and I just can't shake it, I have to start writing that novel. And that never happened with any of the ideas that I came up for Napa. So when I thought of the idea for Crush, it was really because I wanted to get Karen Vale out of her element. I wanted to stress her in a way that's good for the reader. Because if you stress your character, you're going to learn things about the character that we don't know about her. How she reacts, how she has to learn the ropes, because Napa Valley is it's kind of a closed society. There's a lot of layers to it. She comes out there not knowing, you know, really what she's doing relative to the politics that goes on, knows very little about wine other than she likes it. And she's thrown into this culture of having to handle a serial murder case in this region of the country that she's never been and doesn't understand. So that was tremendously fun for me to write. And again, the setting drove, it became a character in the story and drove a lot of what happens relative to Vale and the task force. And then that brings us to Velocity, which we haven't talked about yet, but Velocity is the third book in this series and picks up right where Crush left off. And Vale is still in the Napa Valley, and she's lost something that means a lot to her, and she's trying to find it. And that's where we pick up with Velocity. And it blows up into this story that certainly she was not expecting, the reader was not expecting. The only one really expecting it was me, because I plotted it out while I was writing Crush. Crush and Velocity really comprise, in a sense, one big story. Even though Crush is a self-contained novel and it finishes, there's a little thread that's hanging toward the end, and that's what we pick up with in Velocity, and that's what forms the core of that story.
Now, you sit and you, so Velocity is set right after, you know, Crush left off. Now, was that something when you were envisioning, you know, the Karen Vale novels, you know, leading back here from The Seventh Victim and now up through Velocity? Is that something that you wanted to do? Did you want to try to make that like a continual story where you're kind of like, you know, cliffhanging the readers here at the end of one novel to lead them into the next one?
Well, that's an excellent question, John. What Seventh Victim was kind of self-contained because I really wasn't expecting to write more than one novel based on Karen Vale. I figured that was my opus relative to serial murder, and you know, I put everything into it that I possibly could, including, you know, the kitchen sink. So there was, like, to me, this was it. There wasn't going to be no further Karen Vale. So my publisher sat me down and said, look, the response to Karen Vale has absolutely been amazing. We have to have you make her a series. So that's when I sat down and decided that tried to decide how I would write a series character based on Vale and where I would go with her, and that's where the idea behind Crush came about. But when I was figuring, outlining the story for Crush, I came across some very interesting information on a tour I was taking of Opus 1. And that's a whole other story in and of itself, how I ended up meeting the CEO, and he was taking me on a personal tour, and it was tremendously helpful for me in terms of understanding the Napa Valley and the politics and the whole industry. And he said something very innocently that set off bells in my head. And I went, oh my God, that is the angle to take with this. And my whole outline, I rewrote my whole outline based on this. First, fortunately, it was early in the process. And based upon that comment and that idea that I had, Velocity came about. And when I started plotting this whole story, I realized it was too much story here. And I did not want to cut it down for the sake of fitting in, you know, 400 pages. So I looked at this and I said, all right, I'm going to make a self-contained story with a story arc that will end. So that will be Crush. And then I outlined all those, you know, those things that happened in Crush. And then there was this one thread that picks up toward the end of Crush that forms this other story in Velocity. But when you look at the two, only after reading Velocity do you realize there's so many things that fit in with Crush that, you know, you could read Velocity as a standalone and be very happy with it, or you can read Crush and Velocity and go, oh my God, there's so many layers to this thing.
Yeah, and when you're sitting here looking also, you know, you took, and I think it was probably because your FBI work, but, you know, you took 6 years off from here, from The Hunted until The Seventh Victim came out. So you had a lot of time off to start thinking about, you know, your character and exactly how you wanted to formulate it. And so I have a question here from the chat that wanted to know, you know, why did you decide to go with a strong, you know, female character instead of a strong male character?
You know, that's a great question, and I've been asked it a lot of times because it's, you know, it's a little unusual. And really, it wasn't a conscious decision on my part. When Karen Vale came to me, when I was writing that scene, she came to me as a female. And when I wrote the first 75 pages of The Seventh Victim, this is really interesting. I wrote it in the first person because that is how Karen Vale came to me. And it wasn't a conscious decision where I'm going to sit down now and write a female character, I'm going to use the first person. I just started writing. And that's unusual for me because when I write off an outline. Now, it's not a chapter outline. It's just a general blow-by-blow outline. So there's a lot of flexibility in there. But generally, I know where I'm going because I know where I'm going to end up. So for me to just start writing in the first person, which my other two books at that time had been in the third person, and my agent said to me when she saw these 75 pages, she said, you know, you can't switch to the first person. You're going to confuse your readers. Whether or not she was right, you know, that's debatable. But at the time, I figured, hey, this is what I'm paying her for. She is the expert here. I was early in my career. I figured, fine. You know, I wasn't happy about it. So what I did was, don't laugh, I went to Microsoft Word. I did the find and replace. I replaced all the I's with she's and you's. And,
oh, my Lord.
I swear. And what happened was, and I went back and I read the first few paragraphs, and I realized that what it was it was the third person, but with a first-person sensibility. So it was very close to the reader. We were inside Karen Vale's head. So it was almost like I had created this brand-new point of view. And so I wrote the rest of The Seventh Victim in that voice. And, of course, Crush was written that way, and now Velocity. So I found my own Karen Vale point of view, so to speak. And so it wasn't a conscious decision. I'm going to write a female character, I'm going to write a male character. It's just the way it worked out. False Accusations, there was a male lead. And The Hunted, there was both a male and a female lead. We start off with the female lead. And then, of course, now you have The Seventh Victim and Crush and Velocity all as Karen Vale. So, you know, sometimes it's how you feel it's best to tell the story. What voice, what character do you create? And it really doesn't matter if it's male or female. It's the character that drives everything that's going to happen in that story.
So we're talking here with Alan Jacobson, and we're talking about his latest release called Velocity. It's the third book in his Karen Vale series that if you're a reader of Alan, then you'll know that this book left off right where Crush ended, and his website is alanjacobson.com to find out more information. The other thing that you can also find on here is he has, you know, a lot of information, and you're touring big time here for this, going around, you know, all across, you know, a lot of California, Arizona, and, you know, even into Washington, D.C. So now, is that something that, you know, you like to do? Do you like going out and touring? You know, you're doing that on October 5th, which is when, you know, the bookstore is when the book will be out. So is that something you like to do?
Well, touring is very hard because when you're writing a book a year, you're on a deadline. And I do a lot of research, as obviously you can tell from what we've talked about today. I do a lot of research, and the research really can take months. In the case of The Seventh Victim, it took years. So it's very hard to take time off to go and tour. And when I tour, it's early morning till late at night, and then, you know, on a plane, and then, you know, flying to this city, that city, and then repeating the process over again. It's emotionally and physically draining. So that part of it, I don't look forward to. I look forward to seeing my readers and my fans and meeting everybody and talking about my writing and the novels. That's tremendous fun. And doing interviews like we're doing now, I enjoy those as well. So, you know, everything has its pluses and minuses. I try to write on the plane. I try to write in the airport. You know, I've learned as a writer that you basically, you know, you write when you can. And if you don't, then you can't meet your deadline. So
right.
Tours are tough in that respect.
Well, I'll go ahead.
Yeah. One thing that I wanted to mention, you mentioned my website. There are a couple of things I just wanted to point the listeners out to. One is the free personal safety booklet that I co-wrote with one of the FBI profilers. Very, very important information in there, filled with tips on staying safe and avoiding criminals and violent criminals in particular. So that's free on my website, like you said, alanjacobson.com. You can also get it at safetybooklet.com, either one. And then the other thing is there's a very interesting four-part interview I did with one of the profilers. Video, if on their homepage you scroll to the bottom, you'll see a button that says Video Gallery. Click on that, and you'll see there's a four-page interview I did with FBI profiler Mark Saffrick. It's fun. He asked me about Crush, and I asked him about his career as a profiler in the FBI.
Yeah, you have a lot of great information here on your website. You can also sign up for Alan's newsletter by typing your email address, which was something that I mentioned here at the beginning of the show, which is a great way to stay in touch, you know, with your favorite author. And, Alan, I'll tell you what, we burned through this 20 minutes. But the good thing is that you will be back to talk a little further in October. We're going to have you back on, I think, what was that, October 29th?
Correct.
That we're going to have you, or was it the 26th?
It was 29th.
So we're going to have you back on to talk a little bit after, you know, a lot of your events are going forth to talk like that. So fascinating stuff. And, hey, I want to thank you so much. We will see you in BoucherCon in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
And, hey, I really appreciate it. We will talk with you soon.
John, thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. So, everybody, that was Alan Jacobson, and you can find him out at alanjacobson.com. And our next author here, we're going to go, and her latest book is called Fragile. And I want to welcome Lisa Unger here to Suspense Radio. So, Lisa, how are you doing tonight? Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm great, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so your book, Fragile, it's your fifth book, correct?
Well, yeah, it is. It's my fifth book as Lisa Unger. It's actually my ninth novel. I published four books earlier in my career under my maiden name, Lisa Michonne. So I wrote four books for St. Martin's Press. So technically it's my ninth novel, but for many of my readers, it's probably just my fifth.
Yeah, it always confuses me when you have the pseudonyms, because I'm like, okay,
How many books is it?
I know. But, you know,
it's a multiple personality disorder, I guess, or something like that.
And, you know, and that's great for a writer, because then you can write many different characters.
Exactly.
I mean, how awesome is that? I mean, that's fabulous. You know, you can put yourself in so many dark places.
That's yes, and I seem to be prone to doing that. So, yeah, I guess it's an occupational hazard or benefit, depending on how you look at it.
Right. Now, Fragile is one of those books that, you know, me as a parent, it's always one of those books that's very difficult, just because, you know, it deals with the abduction of, you know, a local girl, and, you know, I have two girls. And so how did your book come about, and, you know, how's it doing? And it came out on, I want to let everybody know, it came out on August 3rd. You go to lisaunger.com, a ton of information on her website to find out about her. So Fragile, tell us a little bit about.
Well, Fragile is actually the first novel that I've written that is based on an actual event from my past, very loosely based, I should actually say.
I was going to say, wow.
Inspired by an event from my own past. When I was 15 years old, the girl that I knew was abducted and murdered. And it's an event that sort of changed the way I saw the world. Obviously, it happened in a town that was quite small and idyllic, not unlike the Hollows, although the Hollows is not an exact fictional retelling of the town where I grew up. But it was the kind of place where people move their kids to be safe. You know, it's the kind of town where you leave New York City to live.
Right.
And so when this event occurred, it was very traumatic, obviously, for the entire community. And it's something that has stayed with me. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, sort of laid heavy on my heart, but it's definitely something in my thoughts that I have returned to again and again. And, in fact, the story itself has tried to find its way out in other partials over the years that I have discarded. And because of the way I write, which is without an outline. I have no idea what's going to happen day to day. I don't know who's going to show up or what they're going to do. I certainly don't know how my books are going to end. It was about, I was a full quarter of the way into the book before I realized that the story had finally found its way onto the page. And there are a number of reasons, I think, why it took me this long. First thing is, I think in writing Fragile that I realized you can have the, you know, ambition to tell a story and not really have the craft to tell it. And I believe it took me sort of the writing of 8 novels to get to the place where I could write this book. And also the voices that finally succeeded in telling this story were much older than the original voices that have tried to tell it over, you know, the last 20 years, I think. And so it's almost as though, you know, my characters needed to grow up. Maybe I, the author, needed to grow up, and maybe I needed to become a wife and a mother myself before I could really understand the true dimensions of the story I wanted to tell in Fragile. And that's, you know, basically that's basically Fragile in a nutshell. It's loosely based on this event. It's not a fictional retelling of what actually happened, but it's definitely comes from that place, from that change within me.
So, you know, you're talking, I don't know if you want me to let people know, but you're talking about over almost 25 years ago that these events happened. I mean, when you were thinking of this, I mean, did it drum up some things inside of you that you were just, you know, it was very difficult for you to just get through?
It wasn't difficult or painful in the way that you might imagine. I mean, obviously there were deep rooted memories and thoughts that had stayed with me, and in a way it was almost cathartic to finally put things on the page. I mean, I think that's, as thriller writers or mystery writers, that's what we're doing. We're metabolizing these sort of dark thoughts and dark imaginations, and I think in many ways it was helpful to finally organize it. And also it's, you know, again, it's not a fictional retelling of what happened in the town where I grew up. I had a real fear of exploiting the memory of a girl who was lost or hurting her family in any way. So I didn't do a lot of digging into the past. Like, you know, I didn't really research the case beyond what I already knew, you know, trying to get at those details. I used my own visceral memories of the event to sort of tell the essence of the tale, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
And I only wanted to tell what was mine to tell, which is basically, you know, where I was standing when this happened, what I saw, what I felt, what I remembered. Because, I mean, that's such a powerful theme within Fragile, is the idea of memory and how our memories, both the ones that, you know, we replay over and over again to define ourselves, and also the ones that we press down and want to try to forget, how they wind up defining us. So in that sense, it was very important to me to be true to my real memory of the actual event, but not to the degree that it's a fictional retelling of what actually occurred.
Now, would you say, and you know, we get the sense, because we read the book and I know we reviewed it, and now hearing, you know, that this was kind of loosely based off of true events, you can see with that the emotional part of the book, I think, was very, very dynamic. And I think that, you know, would you say that, you know, starting back with your first book, you know, Beautiful Lies, and up through Sliver of Truth, Blackout, Die for You, and now Fragile, would you say that this is probably the most, you know, emotional book that you have, that you've put yourself into?
I wonder. I don't know if I can say that. I don't know that I have enough perspective. All of them felt very true and emotional to me. I felt very personally, you know, I feel a tremendous amount of empathy and personal connection to all of my characters. I feel, you know, sort of very protective and kind of loving toward everybody that I've met on my literary journey, even, you know, the most horrible among them.
Uh-huh.
I feel they have some, most of them have some redeeming quality. And I think that emotional closeness that I feel to my characters, I hope it translates into some type of emotional authenticity. But again, I think that, you know, my goal as a writer, well, my goal has always been is to be a better writer today than I was yesterday. And I think if you're really working on your craft, you can do that. And so I hope that, you know, if you feel that, if you felt the most moved by Fragile, it just means that I'm getting better.
Yeah, you've done your job. That's what I've always said that when about authors is that whether you write characters that are loved or extremely hated, you've done your job because then they feel an emotional connection. Either way, doesn't make a difference.
Right. Exactly.
So, yeah, and so from Beautiful Lies up through now Fragile, how have you, you know, how yourself have you felt that you, you know, have evolved, you know, greater? Have you been able to, you know, write deeper characters or, you know, how have you evolved?
Well, I think that, you know, my life is, you know, sort of an ongoing research project, you know, and I'm sort of an information and knowledge junkie. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, hopefully the longer you're alive, the more experience you have and the more wisdom and understanding and maturity you have as a person. Certainly becoming a mother has changed me yet again. I think becoming a mother has made me a better writer, a more empathetic person. And I think that having, you know, greater empathy for people and situations and character, I think in that way you could probably see my evolution the most as a writer and hopefully as a person as well.
And now when I was looking back and I'm looking at your news here, Fragile made the New York Times bestseller list. Now was that
it's
the
it.
First now and was that the first one that for you to do that? Was that your first
no,
one?
No, it's my second. It's my
okay,
second.
What's
so
your
it
second?
Was very, very exciting. Thrilling, in fact.
And so you gotta tell us, how did you celebrate when that happened? Because I know that that's a huge, you know, first of all, just writing the book is a huge accomplishment, and then you're getting it to sell. But now you're reaching New York Times bestseller list. I mean, you know, how the heck are you celebrating that one?
I don't know how to say that because, you know, obviously my husband and I, my husband is sort of one of the major partners in my business. You know, he kind of helps with everything, and he does everything from accounting to publicity and all of that. And so it's a real family business,
mm-hmm.
Or that's how we feel about it anyway. And so just being able to celebrate with him, you know, kind of all these years of I can't even really call it hard work because I love what I do so much. It doesn't ever feel like that, but just all these years of pouring, you know, all kinds of energy into the creative and also to the business end of things and really just being fully focused on that and just kind of, you know, loving the process. Sometimes it just feels like the process itself, being able to be a full-time writer and making my living and supporting my family doing that, is what, for me, is cause for celebration every day. You know, I feel so full of gratitude every day. That the, you know, the bestseller list and the great reviews, those are all fantastic things, you know, definitely goals and major accomplishments. But, you know, it's almost like icing in a way because just the act of being able to do what I, you know, make a living doing what I love is such a gift that I sort of dwell in that place of gratitude already.
Right. I mean, I can't agree with you more because it just is so great to know that when we started our magazine here a little over 2 years ago, that my wife and I can do this and share this together because she's the avid reader and she was like my inspiration of why I wanted to start the magazine. And so, you know, to be able to share it together, and I'm not going to lie, she does 95% of the work. And, she's probably working now somewhere, you know,
right. She's
doing something working now, you know, even if we do have friends over at the house, she's still working and this and that. But yeah,
right.
I mean, it's great to know that, you know, you can do it and you can do it together and have that great support system because then it makes it just makes the whole experience that much better.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the best things about my life is that, you know, when I met my husband right after I finished my first novel, and he was really one of the first people to read it. And this was, you know, long before I was published, of course. And, you know, he really believed in me from the very first, you know, page that he read. And then over the year, this year we'll celebrate our 10th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And over the over these 10 years, you know, we always hoped that one day we could do this, that it would be, that my work would be the main source of our income, and that we would, you know, create a business, and that he would be a part of that. And to have been able to do that is, you know, is such a dream come true, and it's something that we've worked so hard for. So we always, you know, we always remember to be grateful for that, even though, you know, it's often chaotic, you know, working together and parenting together, and, you know, we're in the same house and we're in close proximity all the time, and, like, you know, other couples are, like, struggling to find time to be together, and we're trying to figure out how to be apart.
I got that.
So it's like, you know, it gets very crazy, but, you know, my goodness, what a blessing, you know, for us, you know, sort of all to be in it together. You know, and even my 4.5-year-old, you know, it feels like she's part of it too, because, you know, she comes on every book tour with us. You know, it's like every book tour is a mobilization of, you know, my husband, my daughter, my parents have to come too, because, you know, otherwise we can't really,
right.
We can really manage without them. So it's just kind of this whole family enterprise, which is crazy and, you know, so fun. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, because there's a lot of times when you're like, you know what, it might be, you know, 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night, but you got to get the words down on the page, and to have that support system to understand that that's what you have to do, you know, just makes it that much more fun. Now, speaking of, you know, you have children, and have you thought of possibly, you know, because John Connolly did this for his nephew. He wrote a book called The Gates, and because he wanted his nephew to be able to read, and I believe his nephew was like 10 years old, so he wrote a book for them. Now, have you thought of maybe jumping a little bit of out of your suspense genre here and maybe writing something for, you know, like teen adults, so maybe your kids can get involved and read like that, or, you know, have input?
Yeah, you
something?
Know, I actually, I have, you know, just my one daughter, Ocean, and she's 4.5, and I write for her all the time. You know, she's a, you know, obviously books are a gigantic part of our lives, and so, of her, you know, a gigantic part of hers as well. So we have all the books that, you know, by other authors that we read and love, but we also, she and I create stories together, and I write, you know, a lot of stuff for her, stories, poems, you know, just really all different kinds of things, songs, you know, I keep a journal for her, of course, you know. So it's something that I already do. Whether I would ever move toward getting those things published, that's another matter. I don't know. We'll see.
Well,
never say never. I feel like between being a mom and being a full-time writer, sometimes it seems like, you know, there's not enough room for an additional project. But, you know,
right.
Definitely all the work is there, and who knows if I'll ever make the move to try to share it with other people as well.
Well, you know, because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of leading that into my next question of, you know, every author gets the same question, so I'm no different. I'm going to ask, because it's, what have you done for me lately? So what's next for you? You can't stop now. Now you got two on the New York Times bestseller list. You got to go for the trifecta. You just got to keep it going. So,
well,
what's
sure,
next?
Yeah. Well, the next book is done, of course. I mean,
yeah.
that book.
You're probably working
the
on
that'll...
two ahead, right?
Right, yeah, the next book is, which will publish in August 2011, is done, and I actually was not able to leave The Hollows. I wound up not being able to go, even though I didn't intend to stay. I didn't intend to stay.
They dragged you back in.
I thought I was out, and they pulled me back.
I felt very
close to Jones Cooper. And I couldn't stop hearing him. I mean, obviously, after the end of Fragile, you know, I'm sure everybody realizes there's a difficult road ahead for him.
A lot of unfinished business.
Yeah. A lot of unfinished internal business. So I found I couldn't quite move on from him. I felt very, very connected to him. So... I've written another book set in The Hollows, and now I'm, you know, I'm fully into the one that, you know, we'll publish in 2012. So
right, so you're working on that one right now, doing everything with it.
Yep.
Do you have a name?
The name of the next one?
The name of the next one in August, yeah.
Yeah, it's Darkness, My Old Friend.
Oh, okay. So now, everybody, we are talking here with Lisa Unger, and we are talking about her latest book, Fragile, along with a lot of other things that she has going on. And her website is lisaunger.com, U-N-G-E-R. Check out her books, along with Fragile, and her last one, which was Die For You, then Blackout, Sliver of Truth, Beautiful Lies. And so I have a question here from the, you know, from the chat. They're asking a ton, but you know what? I just keep talking because, you know, that's just who I am. So I'm going to ask my own question. But here's this one, is that for people, you know, that might not know who you are and they're just getting acquainted, which book would you let them know to start with?
I guess I would always say start at the beginning, you know,
okay.
with Beautiful Eyes, or even if you wanted to go back further to the original Lisa Michonne books. But I think that, you know, to start with Beautiful Eyes.
And are they still
Eyes,
in print, the original books, those original? They're still
sort of out there in the ether. I'm in the process now of kind of corralling my rights back from the various
people
who have
them
published.
Back. Heck yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get them back now. We've had some issues with a foreign publisher who published a Kindle edition of those books.
Damn foreigners, yeah, because now they're doing all the electronic and they think they got the right.
Yeah, and they're not
you
allowed
should
to
get
do
with
that,
David
exactly.
Morrell, because he's mad about that, and he'll let
yeah.
you know what to do.
Yeah, we're on it, believe me. It was very distressing to learn that they had done that. Because they're, you know, obviously it's a violation of international business law. And it's, you know, beyond that, it's just plain awful to do that to an author, to take their work
right.
and publish it electronically. And then, you know, I haven't seen a royalty statement from this particular publisher in, you know, several years. And it's pretty unethical.
Flat out theft. Yeah, it's flat It's flat out theft. I mean, that's what they
yeah,
did.
It's
I mean,
just, it's just yeah, of course. It's exactly what it is. It's theft. And so we're in the process now of trying to get all that taken care of. So, you know, I don't talk as much about the earlier books as I probably will be within the next year or so. But I would say, you know, start with Beautiful Eyes, because that's a good place to start for my body of work.
Okay. And then, like I said, you have Sliver of Truth. Then you have Blackout,
Die For You. Sliver, because that's really, I always think of Beautiful Eyes and Sliver of Truth as one book.
As one, okay. So kind of.
I always think of it as one book, as one book.
Okay.
But, you know, and then on to Blackout, which is the next book, Die For You follows, and then Fragile, of course, is the most recent hardcover.
So real quick here now, I'm just curious to know, is there anything in the works with, you know, there's a lot of authors now that are starting to get some pickup steam here with, you know, Tess Gerritsen, who we had on last Friday with Rizzoli and Isles, and now Trisha Cornwell finally gets, you know, her pick out there with Kay Scarpetta. Is there any mention of any one of your books maybe, you know, seeing on the small screen or the big screen coming up?
Oh, you know, I've had options. There's been options on Beautiful Lies, and there was an option on Blackout. And, you know, nothing's ever come of any of the options. So I feel like it's something that could happen. Maybe, you know, who knows, tomorrow or 10 years from now or maybe never. I don't know.
Right.
I guess in a sense I'm just happy to be published well. I mean, it would, of course, be a thrill to see, you know, one of the books find its way, you know, onto the big screen or even the little screen, the way things are these days, so much, you know, great TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that, you know, I feel like I have any control over.
Right,
or that anybody does. It seems like kind of a crazy business to me. You know, it seems like there's a lot
very crazy.
Like a little bit unethical and sort of short-sighted, and I'm not really sure how these things work or when they do. So I've had a variety of, you know, film agents and, you know, producers wanting options and whatnot, but nothing's ever actually come to pass.
So real quick, last question here, because this is something I find interesting, and I should have mentioned this earlier, is because on your website, lisaunger.com, you go to reading groups. You will actually and I don't know how you pick this or how much you've got, but you will actually be able to, if a reading group is reading your book, let's say Fragile, and they want to schedule a 20-minute conference with you for speakerphone, that you can talk the book with the group.
Yes, I do that a lot.
The first author I've seen that's ever done that. I mean, great. I've never seen one.
Oh, it's fabulous.
It's
one of my favorite things to do, honestly. It's great because, you know, I mean, I do more around pub time, but honestly, I probably do even on a slow month, you know, 2 or 3. And it allows me to connect with people who, you know, one night it might be in California, the next night it could be in Arizona, I could, you know, have something even local. You know, it allows me to connect with people and be part of their book discussion, which is really fun. I mean, it's a little bit different from, you know, the formal book signing because, you know, in most cases people have come to the formal book event to buy your book and they haven't read it yet. They just want you to sign and hear what you have to say about it. But when you speak with a book group, everybody's read it. And they're super invested in the characters and they have a lot of questions and things they want to talk about. And it always becomes a much bigger discussion. You know, it always becomes a bigger discussion than the book itself. And sometimes
it probably lasts always a lot more than 20 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say 20 minutes. It does say there's a 20-minute limit. It's usually like 40 minutes or an hour.
I think your husband put up the 20 minutes just to say, look, you got to put a time limit up, otherwise he's going to talk to you forever.
He does. He's like, okay, 20 minutes, that's it. I'm like, I promise, 20 minutes. And then it's like, I can't, you know, everyone's
He's banging on the door. Hey, it's been an hour.
He's trying to lure me out with a glass of wine to come drink your wine.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, Lisa, thank you. I mean, I want to thank you so much. This has been so much fun to have you on.
Oh, thank you.
We've talked with you. And, you know, we definitely want you to go ahead and keep us up to date on what you have coming out because we're looking, you know, forward to your next book coming out in August. And again, that title was, it was a longer one. It was Darkness.
My Old Friend.
My Old Friend. So,
yes.
But everybody, it's time for you to go out and you go get Fragile. Lisa's latest book, go pick up Fragile. And, you know, you can always go back in Beautiful Lies, Sliver of Truth, Blackout, Die for You. So, yeah, and if you have a reading group, go to her website, lisaunger.com, click on reading books, reading groups, and you can go ahead and she will chat with you for 20 minutes, sure.
20 minutes.
About your book, and you guys can talk, you know, discuss the book right there with her. I mean, how great is that? So, Lisa, thank you so much again for joining us. We really appreciate
it. Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. This has been a great chat.
Thanks. You have a nice night. We'll talk with you soon.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye. So, again, everybody, that's lisaunger.com to check out her book, Fragile. And what I find is a fabulous way to get in touch more with your, you know, with your readers is to do that reading group thing. So you want to make sure you check that out. Again, Alan Jacobson was who we had on first, and his website is alanjacobson.com. And he was discussing his book, Velocity, along with, you know, his other ones, which was Crushed before that, Seventh Victim, and then Into the Hunted. And this was his third book in the Karen Vale novel. So a couple more announcements that we have going on is our good friend Scott Nicholson and HauntedComputer.com is doing his blog tour. And everybody wants to go to Haunted. You always have to go to Haunted Computer and check out what Scott Nicholson is doing because he does a great service for indie authors, you know, people who might not be able to get a publisher or don't want a publisher and want to do it the electronic, you know, kind of out of the way here way to get their book to be seen to as many people as possible. So check out HauntedComputer.com. You know, again, you know, we had mentioned, you know, Patricia Cornwell has her new fan page up. Chris Kuzneski is talking about The Prophecy. So go online, search your authors, find their websites, get the newsletters. You can go get our newsletter at suspensemagazine.com. Another announcement that I forgot to make is that our magazine will now be in bookstores in mid to late October. Sales were almost 4 times greater than what they expected them to be. We'll get a list of exactly which bookstores it's going to be in. We will post that on our Facebook and our Twitter, and you can find that out. You can also, you know, like I said, sign up for our newsletter. We'll have different information in there. So I want to thank everybody, and I want to see you on Friday night when we're going to have Sue Ann Jaffrin and Sebastian Stewart from Midnight Inc. Their authors are going to be on with us on Friday night. Check out the archive. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you on Friday night.